Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
Factory production in China is at its lowest level since 2012. This comes as China's economy continues to decline. Jim Dresbach tells us more.
China's economy continues to weaken, according to recent surveys. China is the world's second biggest economy. Figures released Tuesday show the country's factory production is at its lowest level in 4 years. The Official Purchasing Managers Index, or PMI, tracks activity in factories. The manufacturing PMI in China is reported by Market Economics. The index dropped to 49 in China in February. In January, the PMI was 49.4. Any reading of the PMI below 50 signals contraction. It was the seventh month in a row the PMI dropped. Observers of the Chinese economy say February's PMI reading could have been affected by the New Year holiday. Many factories close for an extended time, and workers stay home during the holiday. Another survey showed China's economy is slumping. The Caixin Market Purchasing Managers Index fell to a five-month low of 48 last month. It was the 12th month in a row that the index declined. The index calculates economic output, new orders, and employment. The economy in China grew at an annual rate of nearly 7% in 2015. That was the slowest amount of growth in 25 years. To give the economy a boost, the Chinese announced a round of spending to help the economy and added to the money supply. The People's Bank of China, late Monday, announced it was cutting the amount of money that banks must hold as reserves. The People's Bank also added $100 billion in cash into the banking system to aid in new lending. I'm Jim Dresbach.
A Japanese government study reports almost one-third of women say they have been sexually harassed at work. The women said they had suffered from unwanted physical contact, insulting comments, and other harassment. It is the first government study of the sexual harassment of Japanese women at work. It was released Tuesday. Researchers said more than 9,600 women employees answered questions by mail or online. They said 18% of the women who were asked to take part in the study agreed to do so. 29% of those who answered said they suffered sexual harassment at work. 54% of that group said their face, body, or age was discussed. 40% said they suffered unwanted touching. 38% were asked sexually related questions. 27% were asked to eat a meal together or go on a date. Researchers said They also reported receiving many complaints from pregnant women who said they were bullied into quitting their jobs. In many Japanese companies, women and men are treated differently. Gender roles remain traditional in Japan, observers say.
Some immigrants in the northeastern U.S. state of Maine are learning to lose their accents. The city of Portland offers a free class to help reduce accents. Christopher Jones Cruz tells us more.
Some of the immigrants speak English fluently, but have a difficult time being understood because they have heavy accents, reported the Portland Press-Herald newspaper. Asuma Nirabahizi says she left her home and job in Rwanda 2 years ago, coming to America on a green card, in hopes of a brighter future. Nirabahizi has a master's degree in computer science and speaks English fluently. She says all of her classes in Rwanda were taught in English, but here I have to learn again because of my accent. She attends a free class to reduce her accent with seven other students. The city of Portland conducts the class. Marta Greenlaw is the teacher. She is also a speech therapist. She says immigrants who reduce their accent have better success at work, and they can communicate more easily with store workers, teachers, doctors, and neighbors. It's a basic need to be understood, Greenlaw told the newspaper. It affects every part of their lives. Greenlaw begins the class by telling students the 44 sounds of the English language. Those sounds include vowels, consonants, and other sounds that give American English its unique sound. Later, students speak about the food in their home countries. Sometimes, Greenlaw corrects their pronunciation. She tells them to pronounce the word onion as onion and the word potato as potato. She tells the students how the lips and jaw work to form the word. Greenlaw tells the students that some American English pronunciation rules don't make a lot of sense, but she says they are important to learn if immigrants are to be understood by Americans. Losing one's accent is especially important for immigrants who live in Maine, which is one of the least diverse states in the country. More than 90% of the population of Maine is white. Many people who live in Maine have not heard foreign accents, except in movies or on television. Greenlaw says some Mainers are impatient with people who speak English with a heavy accent. Her students say some Mainers ignore them or are unfriendly toward them because of their accent. They say this makes them less likely to speak. Imagine waking up every day knowing you are going to have that struggle, she says. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
Delegates are members of the Democratic and Republican parties who select candidates for president. Most delegates are elected, but some are superdelegates selected by their parties. Bruce Alpert tells us how they work.
If you count the delegates won by Democratic presidential candidates Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, the race is close. Clinton, after a big primary win Saturday in South Carolina, had 90 elected delegates, compared to 65 for Sanders, according to RealClearPolitics.com. But when you count other delegates, Clinton's lead is much larger, 543-85, the political website said. The reason? Superdelegates. They are unlike other delegates in that they are not elected in primaries or caucuses, don't represent a particular candidate, can endorse whomever they wish, and are not bound on the first ballot or any subsequent ballot, said Norm Ornstein. He is a government and politics expert at the Washington-based American Enterprise Institute. Superdelegates are party leaders who make up 15% of the 4,763 Democratic delegates. A majority of the 4,763 delegates is needed to win the Democratic presidential nomination at the party's convention this summer in Philadelphia. Clinton, former U.S. Secretary of State, and Sanders, a U.S. Senator from Vermont, are the two remaining Democratic presidential candidates. Most delegates to the Democratic and Republican conventions are elected in primaries and caucuses. Superdelegates are not elected. They are governors, mayors, members of Congress, and other party leaders who automatically become delegates. President Barack Obama and Vice President Joe Biden are among the Democratic superdelegates. The Republicans have 2,472 delegates to select their presidential nominee. About 7% are superdelegates. The Republican National Committee says the party adopted a rule in 2012 that requires its superdelegates to vote based on the choices made by voters in their home states. That means they play much less of a role than Democratic superdelegates. Superdelegates have made a big difference for Clinton. After the first four Democratic contests in Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, and South Carolina, Clinton had a 90-65 elected delegate advantage over Sanders. But a large lead in superdelegates, 453 for Clinton and only 20 for Sanders, puts her in a big lead for the Democratic presidential nomination. The lead among superdelegates reflects the view of some party leaders that Clinton is more electable than Sanders, Ornstein said. But their support has angered some, especially among young voters who have packed Sanders rallies, he said. Said Ornstein, they, superdelegates, are controversial now on the Democratic Party side because the overwhelming majority have endorsed Hillary Clinton, while the activist outsiders who support Bernie Sanders see this as a kind of cabal to block the popular will. Isabel Framer of Ohio, a superdelegate for Clinton, told Reuters she has made some voters angry. On one voicemail left for Framer, a caller says he does not think it is fair. You get to vote whatever way you want. I'll be watching your vote. But she said such criticism has not changed her mind, and she still plans to vote for Clinton at the Democratic National Convention. After four Republican primaries and caucuses, Donald Trump, the billionaire businessman, has 82 delegates, according to RealClearPolitics.com. Tied for second place are Senator Ted Cruz of Texas and Senator Marco Rubio of Florida, with 17 delegates each. Brian Brox, a Tulane University political scientist, said from the mid-19th century through the early 1970s, Republican and Democratic officials chose presidential candidates. The switch to voting by rank-and-file party members came after the 1968 Democratic Convention. That was the Chicago Convention that drew thousands of protesters opposing the nomination of Hubert Humphrey because he supported the Vietnam War. Today, even though some party officials have voting power at the conventions at which nominations are decided, the vast majority of delegates to those nominating conventions are selected in primaries and caucuses at which registered voters are free to participate, Brock said. In November, Americans will vote for president by choosing between the Republican and Democratic nominees, as well as any independent candidates who run. The winning candidates in each state will get Electoral College delegates, with wins in larger states worth the most. Usually the candidate who gets the most votes wins, but there are exceptions. In 2000, Democrat Al Gore won more votes than Republican George W. Bush, but Bush won the presidency because he got more Electoral College votes. The Council on Foreign Relations describes the election process for U.S. presidents as one of the most complex, lengthy, and expensive in the world. I'm Bruce Alpert.
Senior Chief Special Warfare Operator Ed Byers helped rescue an American doctor who was being held in Afghanistan by Taliban fighters in 2012. Christopher Jones Cruz has more on this story.
For hero Ed Byers, December 8, 2012, was a test of his skills in life or death events. After hours of hiking through the mountains of eastern Afghanistan, he and his Navy team reached its target, a one-room building where Taliban fighters were holding an American hostage. Team member Nicholas Check attacked a guard. Byers, trained in special warfare, ran through the door, which was covered by heavy blankets. They slowed the team's attack. As Byers took down the blankets, the fighters shot at him and his team. In the darkness, he saw a fighter in the corner of the room. He shot him, then saw another person crawling across the floor. By the time I got to him, he already had a weapon in his hand, Byers told VOA. I didn't know if he was just a scared hostage or if he was the actual enemy. Byers called the name of the hostage, Dr. Dilip Joseph. He was a father of four who had been teaching medical workers in Afghanistan. Joseph answered. He was a few meters away. Byers shot another fighter, then laid on top of Joseph, shielding him from flying bullets. When I did that, there was another person within arm's reach, another enemy that had a weapon and grenades and stuff that was in the corner, Byers said. I was able to pin that person to the wall by grabbing his throat and holding him there as I'm laying on top of the doctor until our team was able to come in and take care of that threat. The team saved Joseph, but there was a cost. Nicholas Check had been shot in the head. He was dead. He died a hero, and his name will forever be etched in history as being a true American hero, Byers said. Yesterday, President Barack Obama gave Byers the Medal of Honor, the highest award for valor. Obama praised Byers for his heroism. In just minutes, by going after those guards, he had saved the lives of several teammates and that hostage, Obama said. The president said members of the American military who volunteer for missions of extreme risk with little chance for survival are very special. Byers has been deployed to other countries 11 times. He is still in the Navy. In addition to the Medal of Honor, he has earned 18 medals. I followed a dream, and I never envisioned that I'd be sitting here, he told VOA. I got to serve with some of the greatest people on the face of the planet, and that, in and of itself, is a truly humbling experience. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
In this week's education report, Jill Robbins gives us 5 suggestions for planning a presentation.
English is the language of many international conferences. Sometimes a speaker might use a kind of world English that audience members do not understand. This can be true even for listeners who are native speakers of English. For this reason, Professor Charles LeBeau says the visual message is important. The visual message includes pictures, charts, and other aids a speaker presents during the talk. A non-native speaker of English can understand a picture. It can help carry the message when the presenter's words are hard to understand.
The visual message becomes a very central part of the communication process because everyone can understand a graph. Everyone can understand a flow chart. Everyone can see the words on the slide.
When you prepare a presentation, you might want to show how much you know about a subject. But does the audience care how much you know? Listeners more likely want to understand the main point of your presentation. So, how do you organize your talk to get that point across? Professor LeBeau says this can depend on the culture of your audience. American language expert Robert Kaplan studied different cultural thought patterns in the mid-1960s. He helped English language teachers understand the differences between English rhetoric and that of Arabic, Chinese, Japanese, Spanish, and Russian. English speakers prefer a linear style, which has one main idea. The speaker supports that idea with details or arguments, and then closes the talk by restating the idea. In other cultures, however, speakers may bring in other ideas before returning to the main point. Charles LeBeau says some of his students prepare a speech without thinking of the main idea.
Sometimes a bigger problem is the point that they want to make is not clear. They're not thinking clearly about what is the key point in my presentation and how do I want to say that? Where do I want to say it?
For presentations in English, the best time to make that point is at the beginning. Speakers should make a plan to present their ideas in the order that is common in English rhetoric. When we write our ideas down without such a plan, they are not clear, and our presentation will not be well organized.
I think they prepare the presentation kind of as a stream of consciousness activity. Then finally, at the end of this process, they figure out, oh, what do I want to say? What's the key point in this? And it ends up being at the end of the presentation.
Professor LeBeau says he often sees the engineers he works with give a lot of technical information in their speeches. They want to tell everything they know, but the audience may have trouble understanding which information is related to the speaker's main point. We can tell the story with facts and numbers if they help, and then repeat the point.
In an English language presentation, what we try and do is make it more linear. And by that, I mean, it's more of a story. We use data and we use evidence, we use numbers, but only to help us tell the story more clearly.
Preparing the story message helps speakers give a successful presentation. Professor LeBeau gives these 5 tips for academic presentations, such as those given at professional conferences. 1. Understand the difference between a title and a topic. A topic is general, but a title is more specific. Make sure the title explains the benefit of your subject. 2. Provide an image for those who are not experts in your subject. Explain how your research relates to other fields. 3. Work on transitions, linking words or phrases, as you go from image to image. These should make the connections between your ideas clear. Professor LeBeau says transitions serve as bridges to each new image. 4. Look at each image from the audience's point of view. What questions might they have about each image? Prepare an extra image that would help explain the most difficult question you expect. 5. Rehearse your presentation with a timing device. At most conferences, there is a time limit. It is disrespectful to take more than your share of the time. Cut your presentation to fit the time you are permitted. Professor LeBeau understands the difficulty many students of public speaking face.
Learning a new culture for presentation is really, really tough for many people, and as it is with all language learning. If presentation, of course, is a part of language learning, and there's culture in everything we do in English, and as well as in presentation.
Using these tips for improving your presentations in English should help make the process easier. I'm Jill Robbins.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.